मृदंग प्लीज। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीर वनचारी यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम Canto 4, Chapter 27, Attack by Chandavega on the city of Puranjana, text number 6. Tasyam ajanayat putran Puranjanyam Puranjana Shatani ekadasha viradr Ayushordham mathya athatyagat Tasyam ajanayat putran Puranjanyam Puranjana Shatani ekadasha virad Ayushordham athatyagat Tasyam ajanayat putran Puranjanyam Puranjana Shatani ekadasha virad Ayushordham athatyagat Tasyam, within her, Ajanayat, he begot Putran, sons, Puranjanyam, in Puranjani, Puranjanaha, King Puranjana, Shatani, hundreds, Ekadasha, 11, Virat, O King, Ayushaha, of life, Ardham, half, Atha, in this way, Atyagat, he passed. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The great sage Narada then addressed King Prachini Barhishat. O one whose lifespan is great, Virat, in this way King Puranjana begot 1100 sons within the womb of his wife Puranjani. However, in this business he passed away half of his lifespan. Purport. In this verse there are several significant words, the first of which are Ekadasha Shatani. Puranjana had begotten 1100 sons within the womb of his wife. and thus passed away half of his life. Actually, every man follows a similar process. If one lives for 100 years at the utmost, in his family life he simply begets children up to the age of 50. Unfortunately, at the present moment, people do not live even 100 years. Nonetheless, they beget children up to the age of 60. Another point is that formerly, people used to beget 100 to 200 sons and daughters. As will be evident from the next verse, King Puranjana not only begot 1100 sons, but also 110 daughters. At the present moment, no one can produce such huge quantities of children. Instead, mankind is very busy checking the increase of population by contraceptive methods. We do not find in Vedic literatures that they ever used contraceptive methods, although they were begetting hundreds of children. Checking population by contraceptive method is another sinful activity. But in this age of Kali, people have become so sinful that they do not care for the resultant reactions of their sinful lives. King Puranjana lay down with his wife, Puranjani, and begot a large number of children. And there is no mention in this verses, in these verses, that he used contraceptive methods. According to the Vedic scriptures, the contraceptive method should be restraint in sex life. It is not that one should indulge in unrestricted sex life and avoid children by using some method to check pregnancy. If a man is in good consciousness, he consults with his religious wife, and as a result of this consultation, with intelligence, one advances in his ability to estimate the value of life. In other words, if one is fortunate enough to have a good conscientious wife, he can decide by mutual consultation that human life is meant for advancing in Krishna consciousness and not for begetting a large number of children. Children are called parinama or byproducts. And when one consults his good intelligence, he can see that his byproducts should be the expansion of his Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I have a question. I have a couple of questions. Who is King Puranjana? Like in the allegory, who does King Puranjana represent? The living entity. And his kingdom is called Panchala. Or what does that represent? It represents our body. He has this wonderful wife, Puranjani. She represents his intelligence. Now, Narada Muni is narrating this allegorical story to King Prachini Barhishat. And as readers or students of Bhagavatam, when we are hearing the story so far, What is it invoking in us? What are some of the things that this story is invoking in us? Anyone? I'm not asking what it is meant to do, I'm asking what it is doing for us. Like when we are reading this every day, what is it that's invoking in us? Caution? Could you explain caution in what sense? Okay, very good. What else? The dualities of household life, meaning? You've come to any conclusion of which of these it is? Okay. Okay. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu? Anything else from the ladies' side? Yes? Soumya Mataji? How he's very attached. Okay, wonderful. And what's wrong with being attached? Huh? What is it? Hell. Okay. Correct. Okay. Very nice. He's forgetting his devotional life. Mother Kirtida, speak up. Okay. Anything else? Goloka Prabhu. Prachini, very nice. Narada Muni is telling Prachini Parishat, this is you. Okay. Right. Okay. So, any guess what the 1100 sons and 110 daughters might represent? Senses? No. You're allowed to speculate? Yeah, I'm asking a question. Yeah, we're allowed to speculate. Yeah, guessing is fine. No, fine. Guessing is totally fine. Lightning won't strike you. What do we produce from plants? Correct. Very good. Specifically, I have a plan and therefore I produce what from that plan? And that manifests as? Activities. I'm using intelligence to manifest activities. So he manifested all these activities. They are represented by 1100 sons and 110 daughters. So how one utilizes one's intelligence to produce activities? Here, King Puranjana, or for that matter, King Parchini Barihishat, or any one of us, when I say any one of us, I mean the conditioned soul. Because I want to make a distinction in devotional activities as well. We have the faculty of intelligence to be able to act within this world. And depending upon how our intelligence is helping us, we perform certain activities. And those activities, as a human being, are meant to be guided by certain norms of behavior. We call them rules and regulations. The rules and regulations that human beings are meant to follow, in general, are social norms. But social norms sort of change, but they are social norms. We call them culture or something. And those social norms should have some basis in moral and ethical values. Because the values that one holds on to or one espouses in one's life are coming from the platform of intelligence. Desires are on the platform of the mind. Values are on the platform of intelligence. And therefore one will... The environment that we look up to, that we associate with, that we ascribe ourselves to. And based on such an environment, we build our value system, and those values and principles guide our activities. And one of the such setting that supposed to give us the value system is, you know, we say an educational institution, supposedly. At best, what we get from such educational institutions nowadays is perhaps, in one of the best ones, we perhaps get certain ethical principles to live by. In the actual system of education, the values that one is supposed to get or learn is those values by which, like we were hearing yesterday, that will allow for the soul to not degrade himself in another material body. So education is meant to provide us with those values and therefore consequently those activities by which there is not another body. And that requires character and qualities. Non-violence, tolerance, humility. And they all come as described in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna in chapter 13, texts 8 through 12. There are two principles on which all of the other qualities are hinged upon. Maicha ananya yogena bhakti. That means a quality of chastity unto God. And two, acharya upasana. The word upasana specifically means sitting at the lotus feet of a guru. Upa means lower. Asana, seat. So when one sits at the feet of a guru and hears and learns how to conduct one's life according to these values of non-violence, humility, tolerance, etc., then one's activities will be such that they will be liberating. This is the proper use or proper cultivation of intelligence. Improper cultivation of intelligence is, in this case, of Prachini Barihishad or Puranjana. The worst method or the worst cultivation of intelligence is to simply use it for ahara, nidra, bhayamaituna, simply for refining one's or to meet the urges of hunger, sleep, fear and sex. This is like the crassest, basest use of intelligence. Some people think that intelligence must be applied for betterment of the quality of one's life. That is a little better than animalistic intelligence. But from a Vedic perspective, from the perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam, that is also considered useless. Betterment of life means, you know, cleaner surroundings, a nice social system, a nice financial system for, you know, trade to happen, organization around certain policies. This is to make one's life, quality of one's life, better. But still, the activities itself, the values within those policies, still people do, you'll see, right? This is our experience. Even with a good social organization, like, let's say, the United States, very organized, policies are very clear. Everything is thoroughly done. Yet, at the slightest opportunity, one will act in ways that brings really terrible outcomes. The presidents of the United States, I mean, I'm just not picking on the U.S. anything, I'm going to bring it closer to home later, but, you know, the politicians do something that suddenly, you know, becomes scandalous news events. Or, you know, what's his name, Tiger Woods does something, he cheats on his wife, something. Yeah. So what happens is, because the value system doesn't exist, although the environmental social organization exists, people still act in ways that brings disgrace or degradation or something. Why? Because the basic educational system is failing. It's not cultivating in one the proper character. Higher than that, one might say that I live according to ethical and moral principles. This is the pious kind of persons. We call them the karmis. The strict definition of karmi means one who lives according to ethical and moral principles for a legal sense gratification. Legal sense gratification means I should not steal, but I should work hard, earn money, and then I can enjoy my senses, because that's legal, it's my money. This is the dharma, artha, kama, moksha path. That I should be religious. And unfortunately, even so-called religions and religious systems only propagate how we can legally enjoy our senses. Be religious. Then whatever comes out of that, by being, you know, religious means you go to church or temple every week. Don't harm others unnecessarily. You live and you let others live, principle of cooperation, etc. Do no harm unnecessarily, etc. In Christian language, following the Ten Commandments. Very moral, ethical lifestyle. Yet, from the Vedic perspective, even that is not considered ultimately beneficial. Because using those principles, one will still live a life by which he begets 1100 sons and daughters, meaning pious activities. So the Bhagavad Gita teaches us that whether you do good actions, you act nicely or according to religious systems, you will get a higher grade of life. And in that higher grade of life, you're still bound to a material body. So, like Jai Jagannath Prabhu said the other day, whether we are shackled by a golden chain or a silver chain or an iron chain, one cannot say that I am in a better position than you are because I have an iron chain. I'm shackled by an iron chain. One is shackled. So those activities that liberate a person completely from being bound to a body, it's called bandhana, karma bandhana. One is bound to actions, one is bound to sharira bandha, one is bound to a body, incarcerated. The soul is incarcerated in a body according to its activities or karmic reactions. So Narada Muni is helping Prachini Barishat go beyond pious activities. Or for us, to go beyond the mode of goodness. So you were asking the other day, well, what is mode of goodness? In general, when it is referred to as mode of goodness, it means generally that those set of activities that are in the mode of goodness, but it is not considered shuddha sattva, pure goodness. It's not considered transcendental. It is still tinged with some passion, some ignorance, because it's still within the material world. And Krishna describes that the three modes of nature are constantly competing with each other for supremacy. But the life of goodness is a progressive step towards transcendence. It's called the window into the spiritual world. We're not in the spiritual world, but we can see, we have a better sense of how things in the spiritual world might be, where there is no passion or ignorance. So these, the piety, and like Saumya Mataji was saying, the kinds of activity, one is impelled to act in a certain way depending upon, like I said, the value system. Now the value system gives us or is based on our sense of identity. Depending on what sense of identity I have, I build a value system around it. So in this case, the whole identity that Prachini Barishat has, or the conditioned living entity has, is I am this body, and things connected to this body are mine, and I am very attached to them. And the whole idea that the more I can connect things of my body with my body, the happier I'll be. So all my activities are designed around how I can experience what he said yesterday, gratification versus happiness, within those arrangements of what I think are mine. Like, so there is this fifth canto, chapter 18. There's the prayers by the residents of Jambudvip. And there's Prahlad Maharaj praying to Lord Narasimhadev. There's this set of verses which we've heard many times. There are two famous verses. Actually, this whole section is famous verses. The first one is Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jas Tejase, that verse. The next verse is Swasti Astu Vishvasya Kalaprasidatam. That's his prayer, that let all kinds of envious or contaminated thoughts just rest and just calm down. Let everyone feel a serious connection with God, etc. Then they pray for being detached, for perfection in a detached manner. It says, Ma Gara, Ma Agara, Dara, Atmaja, Vitta Bandushu. Ma means let me not have. Let me not have attachment to agara. Agara means nation or society or country. Dara, wife. Atmaja, my children. Vitta, my wealth. Bandushu, so-called relatives. Because here they're praying on the basis of their true identity. The true identity is that they're part and parcel of God. And so they say, Sango yadi syad. And if there has to be attachment, Bhagavat priyeshu naha. Let us be attached to those who are attached to, or those who are very dear to Krishna. And then they say, Yaha prana vritya paritushta atmavan. Paritushta means very satisfied. Pranavritya is that they hold the value of life. Pranavritya paritushta atmavan. Atmavan means one who is satisfied within. One who finds or tries to find satisfaction within or on the platform of the soul, Atmavan. Siddhyati, such a person becomes perfect, meaning that all their activities are perfect. Adurat, very soon, or not in a delayed manner. Siddhyati adurat. Na tatha indriya priya. Not those, the same perfection cannot come for those who are heavily involved in sense gratification. Sense gratification doesn't necessarily have to mean that they have to drink a lot, smoke a lot, you know, eat all sorts of things, have a lot of sex. That's not necessarily only the definition of sense gratification. In this verse, it also means that we're very attached to this list provided. Agara daratmaja vitta bandushu. Because in this attachment, I'm trying to experience or extract happiness and gratification, as we heard. So perfection cannot come. However piously one might act, their activities are not considered perfect. There is a whole different category of perfect activities. And those, or that set of perfect activities, are only those in relation to Krishna. It is, this story is not to not enter grahastha ashram. If one cannot enter, that's fantastic. Although Narada Muni is narrating the story. So it's not that you should not enter grahastha ashram or that you should enter. That's not being discussed. It's how one utilizes the human form of life. And to utilize the human form of life, what are the set of values that one holds on to? And where do we get those values from? Ideally, those values should come from transcendental sources, like the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita. Then one will not stand the risk of gliding into this, it's called samsara, in Bhagavatam language it's called samsmriti, repetition of birth and death, birth and death. Therefore it is said that a person who can relieve us, or persons who can relieve us from that repetitious unending cycle, is the most compassionate, is the real friend. And only Krishna's representatives can do this. No one else can. The demigods cannot. The politicians cannot. The mundane scholars cannot. The philosophers cannot. Our own intelligence cannot do it. Even if one considers, one cannot relieve oneself, right? That's the instruction of Prahlad Maharaj. Matirna Krishne Parata Swatova. One's mind will not attract to, will be attracted to Krishna simply on one's own strength, nor by the help of someone else. But this someone else means worldly someone else. Mito abhipadyeta grihavratana. Even by conferences, one cannot become attached to Krishna. The only way to become attached to Krishna is by becoming attached to those who are attached to Krishna. So he quoted the verse yesterday, was Mahatsevam Dwaram Ahor Vimuktes. Prahlad Maharaj also uses that verse, similar verse. That one should Mahiyasam Padarajo Vishikam. One should completely bathe oneself by the dust of the lotus feet of a devotee. Nishkinchananam Navranita Yavat. Nishkinchana, that person who doesn't want anything from this material world. So that's the theme, that's the whole backdrop of the story of King Puranjana. It is meant to bring within us, by Narada Muni's potency, a sense of detachment. Detachment does not mean indifference. It does not mean neglect. It just means ability to see clearly. Because when we are attached, we cannot see. We cannot perceive anything clearly. Only when we are detached can we see things, can we perceive things. And to live within this life, or within this, in a detached manner, in a dutiful manner, perform those activities that are ultimately beneficial to us and to others. That's what Narada Muni is appealing to in Prachini Parishad. That's why this whole story. Why an allegorical story? He could have told him, Prabhu, you're such an attached fellow. But he can't take it. So he's narrating this whole story. So he can see, oh, this is what's going on. And that's coming up. Chandavega is going to come and attack. And there's more descriptions. More descriptions on the different aspects of our life. How much the soul is entangled within this material encagement. And so much it is struggling simply to survive. And that's not what the purpose of life is. So on a worldly platform, Prabhupada says, people are very busy trying to check the increase in population through contraceptive methods. And he says the contraceptive method or contraception is sinful. Now, the reason it's called sinful is because it is directly challenging the course of nature. So anytime the course of nature is challenged from a Vedic worldview, it's called sinful. Because nature is designed in a particular manner. It's designed to function in a particular manner. And it is sinful because one is exploiting or taking benefit of nature, but not letting nature act in her own way. So in this case, one is benefiting from or trying to exploit nature in this way, through sexual intercourse. Because that's the pleasure that one is trying to extract. But impeding the natural course of nature is contraception. Oh, the Prabhupada says, like in other places, I want to have sex but no children. This is exploitation. Therefore it is sinful. Another reason is that one does not want to take responsibility for one's actions. Because when one has here sexual contact, the children that are born are called parinama. Parinama means outcome or byproducts. So I want to enjoy that part, that I think gives me pleasure, but the outcome of it, I don't want. This is the half-hand logic, ardha kukuti nyaya, Prabhupada would say. That there was a man who had a hen, and she would lay golden eggs. So he considered, I like the back end. I get golden eggs. But the front end, I have to feed. This is expense. I don't want to spend anything. I only want golden eggs. So he decided that I'm going to eliminate all this hassle, this cost. If I cut the chicken or the hen in half and throw away that end that eats and just keep the end that gives the golden egg, I'm going to profit a lot. It doesn't work like that. Get the whole hen. If you want profit, there's also responsibility. So to enjoy without taking responsibility is called sinful behavior. Now, Prabhupada gives a nice principle. If a man is in good consciousness, he consults with his religious wife, and as a result of this consultation, with intelligence, one advances in his ability to estimate the value of life. So this is the true purpose of grihastha ashram or marriage. Marriage is to consult with each other with proper intelligence, to advance in one's ability to estimate the value of life. Any other reason or any other purpose by which one cultivates one's married life is going to bring about many unwanted parinama, actions and reactions that further entangle the conditioned soul within the intricacies of matter. Dangerous, very difficult. I've been studying 6th canto, in that the Vishnu Dutas are expressing to the Yamadutas how a conditioned soul functions within this world. I say the analogy they use is that of a silkworm. So the silkworm spits out this spit that is actually what becomes silk, but it encases itself within its cocoon and then chokes and dies in it. So its own spit, its own activities. So the conditioned soul is like that in the deluded, bewildered state of existence, does things and actions without considering what outcome it's going to bring, and just lives. And the outcome is that finds himself in a cocoon that takes away his own life, or is dangerous for his own existence. That means another degraded situation. Either an animalistic life, bird or insect, or even demigod, but still. In other words, if one is fortunate enough to have a good, conscientious wife, he can decide by mutual consultation that human life is meant for advancing in Krishna consciousness and not for begetting a large number of children. So there is the Taj Mahal, which is considered to be a symbol of love. This is King Shah Jahan. He built it for his wife. I think she was his fourth wife, Mumtaz. And in 15 years of their marriage, she begot 14 children for him. That means she was busy, so was he. And after the 14 children, she died. And the Taj Mahal is at her tomb, basically. And people go to see that. Oh, look at that, it's one of the wonders of the world. One should really wonder. It's a wonder of the world. One of the wonders. For what? For nothing. That's not what life is meant for. Anyway, he killed her with so many kids, but the point is this, in this case there were 1,100, but she survived. But that's not what life is meant for. Life is meant for a higher purpose, and that Taj Mahal is about 2 hours away from Vrindavan. And most people drive by Vrindavan and go to see the Taj Mahal. They're not even aware. So, don't know why I was talked about Taj Mahal, but that was something in my mind, so I wanted to share. Okay. Comments, questions, you want to add, change something? Karuna, you would like to change something?
I have to add something, like in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says about unrestricted indulgence of sexual activity. So, also here, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that if a person is associating with so many women in his youth, then he accumulates so much disease, so that at the time of death, means when he is, you know, invalid, means in old age, all the disease then comes up one after another.
Oh, I thought you said you want to ask something. You're saying. Okay. Adding something. Okay. Thank you. Jai Jagannath Prabhu.
You were speaking about value system. We were also discussing a little bit in the Bhagavad Gita class, understanding the real value system is based on freedom from accepting material bodies.
Okay.
So then we know only the principle of devotional service can facilitate that. So we were discussing the verse from Gita 9.3. So then Krishna is saying that those who don't have faith in this devotional service, then they cannot attain him, and they continue to walk the path of repeated birth and death. So then Prabhupada gives a really heavy purport. I mean, I found it particularly heavy, saying how one may be, in description of a Shraddhadhana, the faithless, he speaks about three types of categories of devotees. And then he describes the Kanishtha Adhikari as basically having no faith. Even though he's officially engaged in devotional service, he may be officially performing the angas of bhakti, but actually he probably will fall down. There's a good chance he'll fall down, and probably he won't achieve the perfection of life. So my question was wondering, how did you really get the matured faith? Prabhupada talks about firm faith, I think, later on in the same purport. Because I guess I wonder a lot about many of our devotee communities, not so much here, but in our devotional communities, we have persons coming, and they are performing the angas of bhakti. However, it does not always appear that their values are very much different or changed. So I don't know if you can comment upon this. I don't know how to clear. I don't want to ask the question I'm thinking without it sounding like, now we're on camera, it's like a little bit scary.
Okay. Two things, and they're connected. One is the process of hearing. So, bhakti is not just doing some activities, which is also part of it, but in and of itself, what is important that stands on its own is shravana and kirtana. Generally, when a devotee is having a lot of trouble or the mind is bewildered or something, you can trace it back to either improper or insufficient hearing. They're just not hearing from our founder Acharya, Guru, and Shastra. They're not hearing. They're not hearing properly. Now there may be persons who hear the messages. Because when you hear messages, you're supposed to receive the value system. But that value system is useless if it's not utilized, meaning application. So hearing and application, like we say, Shravan Kirtan, Kirtan is supposed to be the application of hearing. So when one doesn't apply what one is hearing, one will not experience transcendence. At least an attempt must be made. Because what happens for the conditioned soul is I have a value system, I've gathered this value system very carefully through whatever experiences, other sources. And when I hear devotional messages, there's a whole new value system. And most of the times, there is a clash between my value system and the new value system that I'm receiving or that's coming my way. And submission means that I take this and discard my existing value system. Because my value system is imperfect. It's based on senses and, you know, anuman, pratyaksha, etc. So unless a devotee is applying, even if there is resistance in the heart, because my intelligence, which is conditioned, is telling me, I'm not sure. But the higher value system, if we can apply, okay, let me try, just because Prabhupada said, just because my guru has said, let me try at least. One faith grows from that because there's a new experience waiting within that. So bhakti is not just activities. I show up, I do something, and that's devotional. They're all supposed to help apply on the basis of what we hear. So these two are very important. Immediately is hearing and application. Application is weak, means value system is weak. The faith isn't distilled or crystallized yet. It remains on the theoretical platform. So people can quote and, you know, say things, but cannot apply on their own in their own lives. Long-winded answer, but does that help? Somewhat. Yes, Jitendra Prabhu.
Prabhupada said, we drop out twice. They used to say in the 60s, drop out, tune in, and, you know, take LSD. But then Prabhupada says, they're dropping out of mainstream society, but we drop out of their society also, so we drop out twice. And we get different values. I like, and then George Harrison's had a song, it's all up to what you value. So I thought that kind of rang a bell.
Okay. In that ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he talks of Ashwadadana Purusha, he takes the thought further and comes to Moghasha, Mogha Karamano, Mogha Jnana Vichetasa, that one's aspirations, one's knowledge, one's activities, they're all bewildered because they lack that faith. So whatever they do, however high, however ethically, morally fantastic it might seem, there's no perfection in it. It's all bewildered activity. Rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shrita. Then they become very rakshasi, severely atheistic. Yeah, there's atheism in that, in some cases. Because a little slight change of environment, gone. One feels anger towards Krishna, one feels something, and they can even give up bhakti, possible. Himanshu Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, you were describing the prayers from the sixth canto, where they're praying that please let us be detached from family,
fifth
country.
Fifth canto. 18th chapter, verse, I think, 11.
So I was thinking, I feel like we kind of know well how detachment works, but I'm not so clear on how attachment works. And I was thinking specifically of a verse from the first canto when Krishna tells Narada Muni that the more you hanker after me, the more your material desires will dissipate. So generally we think, oh, we're advancing if we're becoming detached from material things, but I'd like to know more about how we see our attachment to Krishna and how we hanker after that attachment as a way of getting rid of our material desires instead of just becoming detached.
Well, our process is not detachment from matter alone. Our process is Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. That knowledge and detachment are natural outcomes of connection with or attachment to Krishna. So we are not like the yogis and the jnanis who are pursuing detachment. Although detachment is important, our method of detachment is attachment to Krishna, the process of bhakti, the Vaishnavas, like that. So our attachment, we cannot just sit and have an attachment meter that says I have so many units of attachment. Our attachment manifests minimally in obedience, first of all. That obedience becomes duty, dutiful, and then it becomes real affection, that I'm considering the welfare of, the best interest of Krishna, So something that I'm doing, am I considering Krishna's interest in this? Is this favorable for serving Krishna? Is this going to bring Krishna pleasure? I'm harboring something. Is this going to please Krishna? No. Okay, how do I get rid of it? I don't know how to do it. In fact, it is so heavy that I don't know. I think it's impossible. Okay, then let me go find out from someone how I can and apply myself to it. Because the underlying purpose is I want to please Krishna. That's how attachment grows. Shraddha, ratir, bhaktir, anukrameshyati. It's progressive. Shraddha, faith. Faith means obedience in this case. Because if I don't have faith, I will not be obedient to anything. I'm obedient to a higher, different value system now. Shraddha. Does that help? And that the process is satam prasangam mama vira samvito. I have to hear about how attractive Krishna is, how inconceivable he is also. Okay, 8:30. Anything from this side? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande.